Welcome back to Authentic Talks. I think that you're really going to enjoy this conversation today that I'm having with a church missionary, and he shares a different perspective, and I will introduce him shortly. Before we do dive in with the show, I do want to take a moment to again welcome each and every last one of you personally and introduce myself. My name is Shante Generally, and I am your host. I am a mindset coach, a mentor, an author, as well as mom and wife. And just a little reminder to everyone to be sure to protect your energy. Don't leave your house without putting yourself like in a protective bubble. Being sure to keep in your spiritual practices. You need that now more than ever before, because we're in a period right now that we're going through that is a shift, and there's a lot of different energies that are happening, and a lot of negativity is what you will notice, like, that's happening. But you have to protect yourself, and that way you can make sure that you're not impacted in the same way that other people are being impacted by that energy. And so definitely protecting your energy is something you need to do. It's like a must. And so I wanted to definitely share that with you. All right, you guys. So going back to today's episode, where we're having another authentic talk that I believe you're going to enjoy, and I hope that you find value in this episode, and be sure to share it with family and friends. And if you absolutely love the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. And thank you in advance for leaving that review. All right, you guys, now let's go ahead and dive on in to today's episode, and let me introduce today's guest. All right, now, he is the owner and president of Belt Enterprises, Inc., a church leader and a missionary who has witnessed realities of poverty firsthand. While he was living in another country, he served as a director. This organization creates community-led change to help build hopeful present and future leaders. And he's going to share with us, like, where he went, what that experience was like. And he is also the author of Hope Realized. Please welcome James H. Belt III to Authentic Talks. Authentic Talks is all about authentic conversations. This show is all about growth, love, respect, success, mind, body, and spirit. If you're looking to grow and become your authentic self, then this is the podcast for you. And I am your host, Shante. Welcome to the show. Hi, James. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you, and I'm especially excited about our topic that we're going to talk about today. And congratulations on your book. We definitely have to talk about that. Before we dive in, can I have you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure, I'd love to do that, Shante. My name is James Belt. I am a missionary, or I was a missionary, I should say, in Nicaragua for 3 years. Still do a lot of work there, working in community development and economic development. I'm actually a business owner here in Maryland, of a second generation lawn care company. Grew up in a business. I'm married. I have 2 kids, 3 and 5. And I always like to say I have 2 dogs, 2 cats, and 3 hermit crabs. So my house is quite busy. But yeah, so leader of my church, and as well as a number of other things, but still working with NicoWorks organization I worked with in Nicaragua. So, and I wrote a book. So I guess I'm an author too.
Right on. Well, congratulations. And the name of your book is called Hope Realized.
Yes, that's correct. Hope Realized.
I'm excited to talk about hope and and your missionary work. You were doing missionary work, and you were able to work with people who were living in poverty.
That's correct. I was basically not looking for an opportunity to be a missionary. I'm like the reluctant missionary, you could say. Actually, I graduated college, grew up in a family business, as I said, graduated college, went into financial planning for a number of years. And in the midst of that, my family was part of starting a new church. And I don't know, a few years in, our church decided, our pastor said, hey, we should probably do some kind of mission work. You know, I guess all churches kind of get to that point to some level. And so he had a connection with a guy named Tim Adams, who I still work with today, actually. And he was working with an organization called Orphan Network. And they work with orphanages in Nicaragua. So our church went down on a trip, and I didn't go because I was a reluctant missionary, right? but my family went, my mom, dad, and sister. I have another sister adopted actually from Nicaragua now, but at the time, Jenny, my other sister, they all went and came back and they loved it. And they kind of kept coaxing me along. So the next summer, I decided to go in 2007 and got down there. A year later, my parents decided they were going to adopt. Felt like God was putting that on their heart. And they adopted a 15-year-old girl, Emmeline, who's now my sister, which is awesome. And through that time, I started to ask more questions about why people are in poverty. You know, I think a lot of times we look at poverty and we think it's this big, big thing. And, you know, it's out there. You know, you maybe see like in the past, maybe you'd reference like the Catholic charity commercials, right? Where the kid and yes. the sad music and, oh, yeah. And that's kind of what we think of. But having spent some time in these communities, particularly this community called El Cañon, you know, I started to put names with that concept of poverty. So Josue, Maria Jose, and poverty wasn't just this idea. It was actually a person. And I started to ask myself, well, why, you know, they seem just as capable, just as intelligent as I am. You know, why are they stuck in this spot? And I'm not, you know, I'm lived a relatively comfortable life and, you know, have plenty of opportunities available to me and have a lot of hope for the future. And why does it seem different for them? And so as I started to explore that, and I talk about that a little bit in the book, started to try to figure out, okay, well, what's actually going on here? And 2009, 2011, I was down in Nicaragua again, went on a walk with some kids from the orphanage in this El Cañon, this community means the canyon. And we walked up this hill and you could kind of overlook the canyon, the whole canyon, really pretty sight, you know, despite the poverty around it. And as I was standing up there, felt this not out loud voice, but almost like this voice that I believe is the voice of God in my heart saying, you know, where are you going? And that's kind of how I started to process that. And my first thought was, well, I'm going back to the United States on an airplane to my nice little life. But as I started to process that, I had to kind of come to terms with, well, maybe I'm going to live in Nicaragua for 3 years, and ended up moving down there. Yet I work in community development, economic development in impoverished communities, partnering with churches and other organizations. While I was down there, we developed a bike shop. We bought agriculture development, some we call food security. So teaching people how to grow vegetables, vocational training in various forms, and also supporting on the healthcare and education fronts as well. So basically our goal is to bring hope to people, both practically and spiritually, which you talk about a lot in the book, we can get into if you'd like at some point. But yeah, so that's my my journey a little bit. I tried to condense it as much as I could.
Wow. You have to share with whenever you compare poverty out of the country, the experience that you had compared to mm-hmm. what we see here in the United States, do you think that there's like a comparison or is it like totally different?
You know, I think it's a great question. I think it looks different. For sure. So when I think of poverty, I often think of it like an iceberg. And that might sound like a kind of funny comparison, but you know, when we look at an iceberg, right, 90% of it's below the surface, only 10% above. And when we look at poverty, a lot of the byproducts of poverty, so unemployment, you know, healthcare issues, educational issues, hunger, they're existent in all impoverished communities. They look different, you know, depending on the community and the resources around it and just culturally, you know, differences. But you know, you find those trends, right? But mm-hmm. what I find is there's this 90% that's below that's actually sustaining it. And I've found in my experience that 90% below, and I say it's really hopelessness, both practically and spiritually. So the lack of a real opportunity and the lack of a true identity and who you're created to be. That's the same, whether you're in Nicaragua, whether you're in Baltimore City, you know, close to where I live, if you're across the world in Africa, wherever you might be, where poverty rears its head, that it's that hopelessness. And I say the lie of hopelessness, because I don't think anybody is truly hopeless. No one is born hopeless. It's, you know, there's a lot that goes into feeling like that, to experiencing hopelessness, but it's that lie of hopelessness that sustains it. And so it's addressing that lie of hopelessness that I find addresses poverty. But yeah, so I think it looks different, but in the end, it really comes back to the same problems.
Do you think that people, when they're really deep in poverty that you came in contact with, that they're even aware of it?
Well, I guess that's a really good question. So I would say that yes and no. probably the answer to that. So I'd say to some level, there's probably some unawareness of what, you know, maybe you would say, like, what is out there? You know, that's maybe the way we would think about it, right? So what opportunities? It's different too. So like poverty in rural Nicaragua, for example, is going to be different from that standpoint than poverty on the outskirts of the city, because, you know, the Managua, the capital city, is basically like their wealth area, you know, the place where wealth basically is in that country. And so people there have that comparison a lot more than somebody out in a rural village would. But I think where the awareness comes in is when something goes wrong. So I often say that people in poverty, like I have a huge margin for error. You know, if I make a mistake, if something happens, a health issue, you know, I'm kind of feeling hopeless and I just kind of decide to stop pursuing whatever I'm pursuing, you know, I have a huge margin for error before it really impacts my life for the long term. However, somebody that's living in poverty, they live on a very razor thin margin for error. So someone gets sick and they have very little resources, if any, to deal with that situation. And then they have to borrow money maybe from a loan shark or something of that sort. And it throws the whole system into poverty. So I think when people come up with a real problem and they're in poverty and they don't have the resources to deal with it, yeah, I think they do realize, wow, there's something not right here. And, you know, they feel a sense of hopelessness, like, gosh, I can't ever get out of this situation. You know, no one that I interact with is living a life any different than mine. And so I do think that people, you know, I think there's probably areas where not as much, but yeah, I would say to some level, there's a sense that there's something isn't right.
You did missionary work.
Uh-huh.
Missionary work has been something that people have been doing, you know, like we would see those commercials and we always heard about like feed the children and the, you know, and it had the music and it really touched you where you were like, oh my gosh, and you could adopt a kid and get a picture, you know, that you would have that, you know, your money was donating or contributing to them being able to eat.
Yeah.
Why do you believe that, or is it possible for the missionary work to really solve the problem of poverty?
Yeah, I think, well, I think it depends, maybe is the answer there. So yeah, I think there is the possibility of that happening, but I think it depends on the way we're going about it. And so I'll tell you a brief story from my journey. So when I went down in 2009, when my mom was actually living there for a little while during this adoption process. And when I was down there, I had the opportunity to go to a coffee farm. I talk about this actually in my book, where I went out to this coffee farm, and coffee's, you know, Nicaragua is a coffee producing country. So it was really neat for me. I love coffee. So I was really into it. And we went out to this town, this little town called Pueblo de las Montañas, which means like town in the mountains, pretty, you know, creative name. And it was out in the mountains, and I stayed there, and I talk about how I slept in this little cot, you know, in a very rural, kind of impoverished neighborhood. And they brought their animals inside and this little chicken popped by my head. But the next morning we went out to this coffee farm, and I met these coffee farmers, and I kind of said, hey, you know, what's going on? And they explained to me basically that they could produce enough coffee to support their families, you know, and to really thrive, but they were only able to sell about 50% of what they were producing. And I was kind of, you know, naive to working with people at that time. And I said, hey, I can figure it out for you. I'll find a big buyer. Because that's basically what they said to me was like, we need like a bulk buyer. We're going to sell the rest of this. I said, I'll get you connected with Starbucks or whoever. And so they're like, okay. And, you know, I kind of made I don't know that I really meant to make a promise, but I went home and tried to figure it out a little bit. And they were like, hey, what's going on? And I figured out it's a lot harder to break into the coffee business than I had originally thought. And so that was an opportunity for me to take a step back and say, like, what's really going on here? How do we really solve these problems? And what I came to the conclusion of, as I eventually moved down there, especially, and went down, I went down intentionally with the perspective, I'm not going to go with an agenda. I'm going to allow myself to learn as I go. And that wasn't easy for a guy that grew up in the East Coast, you know, grew up in a business owner family. I just like to solve problems, right? But I said, no, I need to be able to learn from the people that I'm interacting with. And as I did, I realized this hopelessness element that was below the surface, and that if we really want to address poverty in the long term, we have to address that live hopelessness in both a practical and spiritual sense. So we have to create a real opportunity, you know, whatever that might look like, a job, starting a business, training, education, And then we need to create opportunities for people to see themselves differently. And I think that's oftentimes we look at places where a lot of resources have been committed and change hasn't happened. And it just seems strange. You know, there's billions of dollars committed to creating change, right? I mean, there's stats in certain countries in Africa, for example, where $150 billion have been committed, but you know, the level of change seen has actually not been great. And I think a lot of it comes back to, you know, people have the resources, but they still see themselves as created for less than. They don't believe that their life can look different. And so for, you know, the hopelessness that they've lived in and existed within them. And so it's by the need to address that particular issue as well and saying, no, you were created for more, that you were created, the way I see it, is that you were created by a God who loves you on purpose and for a purpose. And that as we reframe someone's identity around that idea, they're able to better take advantage of the resources than presented. And I call that all in hope. It's a hope that's not, you know, we think of hope and we think wishy-washy and I hope I pass the test. I hope, you know, that my team wins the game. You know, the NFL's starting
we
up,
see,
right?
We so, see hope right? as 50% exactly, sometimes, right? Like,
yeah. So this is, you know, I'm saying like, no, all in hope is this practical and spiritual hope that's foundational. That can actually create change. And we've seen it in people's lives. And so if we're addressing both those issues and partnering together and figuring out how can we work together to bring both practical and spiritual hope, I think missionary work, and there are lots of ways to address, you know.
Did you guys give them hope down there?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we do a lot of. And so through vocational training. So, and I think of hope, you know, I give you an example of a woman named Sophia that lives in El Cañon. You know, she joined we were doing a community gardening project and she started there and then she started to maybe see herself a little bit differently and believe that there was an opportunity for her. And she said, hey, would you work with me to start a bean plantation? And so we said, yeah, we'll help you start growing some beans. And so she planted beans and there's a small church in that community, some people that invested in her. And so she, you know, saw herself differently, had some level of spiritual hope and was able to partner with us, and we gave her that real opportunity through the beans. And she's grown that bean crop, sold it. We've helped her kind of reinvest that money. And now she has beans and she has chickens and pigs. I think a little bit of pigs there too.
Wow,
and
that's awesome.
She's taking steps that, you know, eventually will make a big difference for her family. It's not a quick answer, you know, but she has a different perspective now on what the future can hold for her. Same thing with the bike shop started. I could give you a number of examples, but that's a great one. And she lives, El Cañon's extremely impoverished. So that's a good picture of it.
What I'm hearing is giving people the resources. You could teach a man to fish.
Yeah.
Or you could give him the fish. How does that go?
Yeah.
Like,
you better to teach a man to fish than to, you know, just to give him the fish. I probably won't say it right either, but you're right along the lines there. Yeah. And it's, you know, I would agree with that. I think there are times when, you know, there's a really good book actually called When Helping Hurts. And I read it before I moved down to Nicaragua, and I've read it a few times, but it talks about this idea that sometimes we come in and we address development issues, so the need for development, with a relief solution. So, you know, we're like, hey, we'll bring you food or we'll bring you clothes. And they're like, well, actually, we're not, like, we didn't just have a hurricane come through. You know, that would be a relief situation, right? Or an earthquake.
Right.
We need people to give us opportunity. And then there's times when, you know, maybe they do need food for, you know, just the real short term, but they need actually somebody to invest and say, I believe in you. And that's the way I see it. When you talk about giving a man a fish, if you were to talk about it that way in a real practical hope standpoint, it's saying, I actually believe in you enough to stay here and invest in your future, not just to say, well, here's this handout. And that's why one of the things I talk about in the book too is that I think part of the reason we address poverty in that way is that we actually believe people in poverty are hopeless. So not only do they see themselves that way, we reinforce that. So we're like, well, here's a handout because that, you know, nothing's actually going to change. So let me give you some food to help you, you know, just kind of make it through today. And it doesn't mean that never is that the solution, but that's not the long-term solution.
For someone that's tuning in where they feel like it's bigger than them, sometimes when people think that something is too big to conquer, they won't try and they'll run the opposite way. But maybe they do want to do missionary work. What can people do that's here in the United States to help that may not want to leave the country?
That's a great question. Yeah. So, you know, I moved to Nicaragua for 3 years, but that's not everybody's path and not even really what everybody should do. Everyone's gifts are different and their calling on their life is different. And so I often talk about it in the sense of a few different steps. It really starts with a willingness to be curious. So curious about, why does poverty exist? What do I actually believe about people in poverty? Do I believe there's hope for them? You know, where is poverty in maybe my circle of influence? You live in whatever town you live in, there might be, you know, somebody just down the road or a community down the road that you're not even aware of, that, you know, a pocket of poverty that could use somebody to, you know, investing in them. So it first starts with getting curious, and then starts with saying, well, what do I have to bring to the table? So when I went to Nicaragua, we started working with kids in an orphanage. And I said, well, that's great. I mean, I work with kids. I work with an organization called Young Life for a number of years, which works with high school kids. But I was like, this isn't really my cup of tea, so to speak. I loved it, but I didn't really know how I could bring my financial planning background and my business background and make a difference there. And so as I started to explore more, I started to realize, no, that's not true. There is a lot of opportunity for me to use the gifts that I've been given to make a difference. And so it's important for everyone to say, okay, well, what is it that I have? What resources do I have? What gifts, what experience do I have that I could actually bring to the table and make a difference? And then oftentimes it's getting connected. So saying, okay, well, I have these resources. Where can I connect to someone that could use them well, that's bringing practical and or spiritual hope? And we don't need to do everything. I think that's oftentimes we get stuck in this idea of like, if I'm going to jump in, I have to solve all the problems. And that's, you know, that can stop us, right? The bigness of that. But that's not the point. The point is like, you have one little piece maybe. And if we all bring our one little piece, then we can make a huge difference. So find someone maybe in your community that, I'll give an example. Maybe someone is doing tutoring for someone. Maybe somebody's teaching an English as a second language class. Maybe there's some other kind of vocational training that you could do. Or maybe you can, you know, maybe there's a church that you can work with that's giving outreach to people and telling them that they're creative for something more, you know, whatever, or just investing in another human being. These are the small steps you can take to find someone that's doing that. And then just take a step, take one step. And, you know, for me, when I moved to Nicaragua, that wasn't my first step. You know, I could actually go all the way back. And I talk about a little bit in the book about opportunities I had when I was a kid where my parents, you know, said, hey, we want you to do this. And that exposed me to serving other people and, you know, maybe start to ask more questions. And eventually I went to Nicaragua, you know, and eventually, as I said, it, you know, was a number of steps before I moved. And then eventually I wrote a book about it. It didn't start with writing a book or moving to Nicaragua. It started with this one little step. So for people that are out there and thinking, well, how can I, you know, I have to solve the problem or it's so big. No, just take one step. Might be taking one of those steps, being curious. It might be reading a book like Hope Realized or When Helping Hurts or something of that sort. But take a step first. And that step often will lead to another step that will guide you. And you never know where that might end up and what difference you can make in the life of someone else. And so, yeah, there's a lot you can do right in your community. I mean, I live in the United States, and there's a mile from where I am right now, there's a community that needs people to invest in them. And so
I love that.
Yeah. So you don't have to go to Nicaragua.
Right on. I love it. So someone could maybe like help to feed the homeless where you volunteer or just, yeah, I like what you're saying. Like you could start locally and then eventually it could lead you to, you know, wherever it leads, like maybe leaving the country to help, you know. Can we talk about spiritual hope a bit?
Sure.
Like what does that really mean? And what does that look like for someone tuning in that was like, what is spiritual hope?
Yeah. So when I talk about it, in the sense in the book, and when I really talk about spiritual hope, it's this understanding that I was, as I kind of said, my belief system, at least, I was created by a God who loves me, on purpose and for a purpose. And I think a lot of times we get this perspective, because of life experience or whatever, that, you know, my life is stuck. I'm in this spot. You know, I wasn't really created for much, or I wasn't created at all. I'm just kind of a random person here on this earth, and nothing will ever change. And that tends to really impact our ability to take advantage of the resources that are presented to us. One other saying I like to say is, we will treat someone the way we perceive them. And that could be true of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So if you perceive yourself as worthless and hopeless, more than likely the decisions you are going to make are going to be based on that perception. And so what spiritual hope does is it steps in and says, no, you're not worthless and hopeless. You were created for something more. You know, sometimes I think you can think of it as people will say, you know, the prosperity gospel, whatever, there's different words for it. But hey, if you find spiritual hope, like, you'll suddenly become rich. And that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it will allow you to see beyond your current and present circumstances and move forward, believing that despite the challenges in front of you, there is the opportunity for something more to reach your God-given potential. And so that's what I see, where I think spiritual hope is so important, is that, you know, it's great to have resources, but if you don't ever believe anything's going to change, you may not actually fully take advantage of them. And so by seeing yourself that way and saying, no, I am created for more, even though maybe my realities right now don't say that to me, they're not the truest thing about me. And so, you know, being able to take full advantage of that and see yourself as created for more by a God who loves you is how I see spiritual hope.
I love that, because that's like your foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate that share. I think that is definitely good stuff. It's so true, especially today.
Mm-hmm.
In today's society, we need to have that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think about the pandemic, and there's all kinds of statistics about the number of people that are now suffering from anxiety and depression after going through that period of time. And I think a lot of people are feeling hopeless these days.
And yes. So
we need some reframed identities for sure. Even me sometimes.
Yes, we're all human, and we all have these different experiences that, you know, shape us. But what I love about having spiritual hope is that no matter how many times you fall down or you have a bump in the road, it's like that spiritual hope, having that foundation, helps you to get back up and to keep trying and to do it again. The story that you shared about the lady that grew the beans.
Uh-huh.
For example, if her beans didn't grow, it's like not giving up and knowing that, okay, so maybe in this row it didn't work out, but I'm going to try it again. This time let's try watering it a little less or a little more, you know?
That you nailed it. I mean, that has happened actually. I mean, literally. I mean, when you're dealing with agriculture, it's a living thing, right? So that literally has happened, and you've been able to see her press on, whereas others, you kind of see, hey, no, this is just reinforcement that I'm a failure, you know? And so instead of saying like, no, this is just a setback, it doesn't have to be this way.
Yes.
I think it's spiritual hope, like a spark. You know, if you were to think about an engine runs on fuel, right?
Oh, but yeah,
What I think of, like, practical hope is the fuel, right? But you need a spark to get it started. And so the spiritual hope is like that spark that really helps propel it forward.
All right. You didn't give me I think I'm going to have to use that.
Feel free. I probably stole it from somebody else. I'm just
kidding. It's so true. Like a little spark, you know?
Yeah.
Is the church still doing missionary work there now?
Yes. Yeah. So I ended up, when I moved there, I worked with an organization called Nika Works, and the church I went down with, I still attended a Crossroads Community Church here in Westminster, Maryland. And they still support Nika Works as well as go down, although a little bit less in the midst of the pandemic and such. But Nika Works has a full staff there. So when I moved there, one of the things I was able to do is develop the staff and leadership on the ground, Nicaraguans that are now leading the organization. And so we're still doing a lot. We have the bike shop is still doing, it's called Nika Bike Shop. It's doing great. We actually take used bikes from the US and they get shipped down and they buy them there from the nonprofit. And some of that money gets reinvested back in the community. And then they sell the bikes, and that helps create employment and opportunity. And they have ownership in that business. And so that's going on. We have the agriculture projects. We actually have a sweet corn plantation project going on down there. We're developing and quite a few different things, carpentry, vocational training. But yeah, so still very engaged. And then they're also, you know, we partner with churches, and they instill spiritual hope in people and saying, no, like, you're created for more. And that's why we are doing this, you know, because we believe in you. We believe you're created for more. And so between all of that, that continues more so even since I left, really, than when I was there, which is exciting. So
wow.
Yeah, there's a lot going on still, despite, you know, some of the challenges of the past few years.
You know what I love about this is that usually you hear about most people wanting us to, like, just donate so that they can buy rice and ship it, or, you know, like the traditional way. But I love that the missionary work that you're doing and what you have done is to work on the mind and to work on the heart space.
Yeah.
Yeah, those two together can, like, I think that's a beautiful thing. And
it's like this, it'd be easy to think of that perspective as being, you're thinking of people as like at a lower level than you, but that's not what it is. It's really saying, no, they're just as capable and created for just as much as I am, but for whatever reason, their experiences in life has pushed them down, you know, has made them see themselves differently. And without addressing that issue, you're only going to see so much change. You know, you're going to see change. It's going to happen. But what my argument is in the book and in general is that if we want to see real change at a much higher level, we have to address those needs, the spiritual, the mind, all of that, as well as bringing the practical resources that allow people to take full advantage of their new perspectives. So
I love that. Yeah. And the name of your book is called Hope Realized.
Yes.
And this book is for anyone who is wanting to impact life by helping other people to make change or to see themselves as more than they currently do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I would say it's for anyone that's, you know, hey, I'd like to make a difference with my life. Or even if you're like, can I really make a difference with my life? Maybe you've been on a mission trip. Maybe you've just served somewhere. Maybe you just drive down the street and you pass the guy on the corner and you're wondering, okay, can anything really change for him? And can I really have a significant impact with my life? This book will, I believe, partly through my journey, just because that's been my journey. You know, I've been right there with you to realize, no, I have something to offer and there is hope for a better future. You know, sure, we'll probably always have some level of poverty in this world, but it doesn't have to be where we are today. You know, we can see real change. And so, and everyone can be a part of it. You know, there's varying levels and we need each of us to jump in. So.
Absolutely. I've heard stories about people who were living in poverty, but they were so happy on the inside and they had peace and joy and all of these things that people that have sometimes a lot of money may struggle with. And and they were trying to figure out why, how is that possible? You know, but it could be a mindset, but like, just, I like the fact that you guys are offering resources and information and especially spiritual hope. So I love that.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. And you do find that, you know, I think the struggle too, though, is that sometimes those people, they do still, when something goes wrong, you know, and there's healthcare, there's a health situation, and it's kind of like, well, what do you do with that? And that's where we think the practical is still super important to say, like, hey, the world is broken, and you know, there's a lot of brokenness, you know, and disease and all of that. And so bringing those practical resources as well and saying to that person that maybe does have a really good mindset, like, hey, we believe in you, can make a difference for their family. So yeah, no, I love it. Yeah, you're right, for sure.
Are you guys going to take your kids down there when they get a little older?
Yes. Yeah. I wanted to already, but with everything that's been happening, it's been a challenge. But yeah, my hope is the next couple of years to get them down. It's funny. Having lived there, you know, I have a ton of friends. Some of them have been able to travel up, you know, the past few years for various reasons, but many of them have never met my kids. And so I can't wait to get them down there and be able to introduce them to my friends and just where I live for 3 years. My wife moved down. We got married about 18 months into my journey down there. She's from the US, from here where I live. And she was crazy enough to join me down there. And she worked with an organization that helped women get out of prostitution while she was there, and still does actually today. And so we both would love to have our kids to just, you know, have that experience and have a picture of what life looked like for their parents.
Those of you tuning in who have children, you hear it, you can take your kids and start within the community, as James has advised or, you know, shared with us on this episode, and get them involved and look what can happen. Look what your parents did that for you. And it really seems like it's made a huge impact.
Yeah.
Yes. I love it. And it manifested in a book also, yeah. You know, yes.
I would definitely agree with that. Get your kids involved in something. I mean, I think that it helps kids kind of like have a better perspective too on life, and not, we can find ourselves feeling hopeless, you know, because we're kind of so focused in on our own little world, that when we're able to see like, hey, no, there, I can make a difference, it can really, I think, change our perspective. So it's good for the kids too.
Absolutely. If someone wanted to pick up the book, where can they find the book?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You can find Hope Realized on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible, really anywhere you can pick up a book online. You can find Hope Realized. You can go to my website, jameshbelt.com, and find it there as well as other resources. Thank you for asking.
That is good stuff.
With that, it's 50% of the proceeds from the book actually go to NecoWork. So just by picking up the book, you're actually bringing hope to other people.
Good stuff. I love it. So 50% goes back into the organization.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So just by taking that one step of getting the book, you're bringing hope to people.
And if someone wanted to connect with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can go to jameshbelt.com. You can find me, James Belt, on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, James Belt Third there. And feel free to connect. I'd love to talk to you.
What do you want to leave our audience with?
That no one is truly hopeless. There's a lot of hope out there. And whether you're in poverty or you're not, that we all really need a real opportunity and a reframed identity. And that we can find a ton of hope. Hope you'll see hope differently.
I love it. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today, and congratulations again on your book. Keep going. I love what you guys are doing and what you've done, and I think that it takes people like you spreading a message to remind us that there is something that we all can do, and it starts with taking one little step at a time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, Shante. It was my pleasure.
All of the information for James is located in the show notes, and be sure to check out the book. It's available on Amazon, and it is called Hope Realized. I hope that you guys found value in today's episode, and thank you all so much for tuning in. I'm sending you all tons of positive energy and lots of love. I'm Shante with Authentic Talks.